and remind everybody what we are here to do today is our second webinar, which is referral systems that meet practice needs, ultimately in support of the patient. Obviously in support of the patient, that's what it's all about. But we're going to be talking about referral systems that really work for you as well as for the practice. Just a reminder, our overall webinar series objectives were what you see here, which was to really define the role state health departments can play in brokering connections between health systems and community-based implementation, and to increase the number of partnerships available, and by that work, to increase the involvement in transformation of healthcare, and then to increase reach, embed, and really scale the work that you're doing through the state health departments, with community-based organizations, and with health systems. So other than that, we got nothing to talk about today. So when we first talked about our first webinar, this is what we covered. And just a real quick review, we talked about the National Statistics on Chronic Disease. We talked about all of these definitions. What is self-management? What are community-based programs? What is a patient-centered medical home? And how does that tie into recognition? We specifically are referencing quite frequently the National Committee for Quality Assurance, although, as we stated last time, there are other versions of recognition available, and we're just going to be referring more specifically to the NCQA requirements. And we did some homework last time, too, so we're going to talk about that in just a second. Just so you know, there will also be homework at the end of this webinar, and there will also be a survey that we're really hoping that you will take a minute to just complete for us. Our learning objectives for today are to really talk about some of the specific self-management support tools that you can use when working with practices. We are going to talk about the difference between a recommendation from a clinic and a referral system, and how it really is in your best interest to work with referrals. Then we're going to talk about the role of the state health department, health systems, community partners play in increasing the participation. And we're going to define more clearly that there are really three different kinds of systems at work here that we're going to discuss. One is an embedded system where a health system, for example, a hospital system would train, embed a program within their walls and would handle everything start to finish within their own system. Then there is a version that I'm most familiar with, which is the use of a community-based organization to help provide connection, training, support. That organization can also be, does not necessarily have to be a nonprofit organization, can be the state in that function. And then there's the third version, which is kind of a hybrid of using the connect the dots pieces that the community-based organization can do, working with the health system, working with the state, and kind of meshing it all together to meet the needs of the patient. So we're going to talk some more specifics about those as we move through today. And then we'll finish with an action plan. The big thing we want to do is talk about the tools that really work for the practice and for the NCQA or equivalent recognition program. And although there are many, many, many roads to follow to get here, we're going to really focus on these three different systems so that we can get to the heart of what will work best for you. So this was our homework last time. We wanted to hear back from you on what bridges exist now, what additional connections you would like to make, and what you see your role in making these connections successful. And I know that I was really thrilled because we heard back from some of you. I have to say, first of all, that Laura Chisholm from Oregon wins the award for being the first person to have her homework in. So if we were awarding grades, she would definitely get an A. And she gets an A++ because she came up with a wonderful phrase within her homework, which was gentle nagging. And Laura, just so you know, I'm going to add that to my vocabulary right up there with wiggle room and stuff as being wonderful phrases that get to the heart of things in a way that other things cannot. But that gentle nagging, she's referring to getting on the training schedule with patient-centered medical homes so that she can talk with them about what's happening and the connection she wants to make. But I love that, gentle nagging. So thank you very much for that. Also heard from Amy Lynn Olson, and Amy's working with a patient-centered medical home that was reaching out to others who have already implemented the program so that they could really connect and talk about what worked, what didn't work, what challenges there were. And so I'm glad Amy's going to be with us today because I know we can give you some more specifics in that. And then also Danielle McPhee from New York. It was very nice to hear back from you and to get the information and all the work that you all are doing in New York. So thank you for that. The other input we really heard was give us specifics on process and give us specific examples. So here we go. First off, we want to talk about what is the difference between a recommendation and a referral. And for this work, I wanted to take advantage of one of the wonderful folks that have been on the committee that I've been working with at the CDC. And in this case, it's Dr. Teresa Brady, who put together a research program on recommendations and marketing. And she worked with a number of providers and came up with some wonderful information. For example, patients who receive a recommendation from their provider are 18 times more likely to go to a class than those who did not receive a recommendation. So do recommendations help? Absolutely. What providers wanted to know, and this came out of Terry's study, is providers wanted to be able to connect their patients to community resources, but they weren't necessarily aware of the resources. The other piece of this that I thought was interesting is that providers voiced that they might have concerns about what the offering was, what the cost was, what the convenience of a program was, and how credible was it. And so the preferred way of learning about this from the provider's point of view was to hear about recommendations on a one-to-one basis where they were given the information that they could in turn then share with their patient. So that's what a recommendation is. And are they helpful? Absolutely. So it's all about, in terms of making a recommendation work, according to this study anyway, is about credibility, building relationships, and helping to bridge the needs of the practice. Well, as we talked about in our first webinar, evidence-based programs come with the credibility. You all come with credibility. You also come with the understanding of your community, what the practice needs. Many of you come from the perspective of being with the state, so you come with that ability to help connect partners and to understand a lot about the changes in healthcare that are happening now. So in terms of building bridges for the use of the provider, you guys are in the perfect place to do that. So what's the difference between a recommendation and a referral? Well, a referral is a very specific request and a directive. And in terms of insurance lingo, a referral is very different than a recommendation. And that's one of the reasons that some physicians have shied away from really doing referrals and calling them referrals, because when they are talking referrals, they're dealing with the rules as set up by the insurance industry. However, what we're going to be talking about is the importance of a referral, meaning that we want it to be how we want a provider, a health system, a clinic to get folks into class, is to do that real live referral, the same way they would if they were sending a patient to physical therapy or to send them for specific tests. The questions arise, do referrals take more time? And the answer is maybe. It's a firm answer of maybe. But the reason why I say maybe is that if you are making a recommendation, if you are having a conversation with a patient, and you're explaining to them a program that you recommend and why, that takes time on the provider's end to research what the program is. It also takes time for the provider to then talk with the patient about, this is why I'm recommending it, this is what it is. A referral, on the other hand, if you can establish the messaging up front and can get the buy-in from the provider or the health system up front, a referral can be actually quicker than a recommendation. Because, here's an example. Well, Mary, I want you to go to this. I'm going to refer you to the Diabetes Prevention Program or the Arthritis Foundation Programs or Chronic Disease Self-Management Programs. You can fill in the blank. But, Mary, I want you to go to this program. I'm going to refer you today. They're going to be in contact with you. This is going to help you better manage your arthritis. So they're going to give you a call. Here's some information on how they're going to be in touch with you, and we're going to check in next time you're in the office. That's all long it takes to make a referral from the provider's point of view. Now, there are changes in the workflow that happen within the practice, and that does take some time, and that does take a little more effort than just a recommendation and handing off a brochure. But the bottom line is this. Is it easier to work with a person who calls you looking for a class? If a provider recommends that I do something and I say, okay, I'll go do that, and you give me a brochure and I call and I follow up and I get enrolled, that's easy and that's wonderful. The problem is that doesn't work for everyone, and especially folks that are less activated, who are less understanding of the role they play in self-management, who are not yet familiar with the possibilities involved in making changes, and that small changes can have great meaning in their overall health. Those folks need more than a brochure or a recommendation from a physician. A recommendation from a physician is terrific. A referral is much more directed, and so they can be very, very important. It also takes some of the workload off of the referring physician, because then partners can help it take that referral and get that person enrolled. And that's what we're going to talk about next. I think that one of the next questions here is, are recommendations as effective? Recommendations can be incredibly effective if they are made especially to someone who is in a receptive place, if they've achieved a level of activation where they're willing to accept that recommendation. And one of the differences between whether providers liked the idea of a recommendation or a referral, according to Dr. Brady, is that if there is an incentive to make the changes in the workflow, if there's an incentive to make the referral and go the extra mile, or in some cases, the extra few clicks in their EMR system in order to make that referral, if there's an incentive, they are willing to take that step as opposed to a recommendation. So the incentive for them is the work that we're talking about doing with practice transformation with the NCQA recognition for patient-centered medical homes. The incentive is giving the practice what they need to move forward toward recognition. So the other nice part about this whole recognition piece and referral piece is it also gives you as partners and as the state and as the community-based organization some accountability with the practice. You are tracking and collecting referrals for them and assisting them. Therefore, you have some accountability with them, and they have some accountability with you. If they agree to make referrals as opposed to just hand out brochures, then you have a way to follow up and say, we haven't received those referrals yet, which is very helpful. Again, it's back to that gentle nagging that we talked about. One of the pieces that we mentioned in great detail last time, this time we're just going to mention it quickly, is the whole idea of the NCQA standards. And if you look at number 4, that's the one with the nice star up there, this is what we use to work with practices and health systems. And I know some of you on the call are from these health systems and are very aware of this work. But what we are talking about doing is that by having the state broker these relationships, by us all working together, we can help document the referrals to community resources, the referrals to educational programs and classes. We can document for them self-management tools and help provide that information for them. That then gives the practice the incentive to want to work with us on this, and it gives us the ability to meet their needs. So that big tracking piece is very important. It's also one of the things that they must pass for their NCQA recognition. Now, this also goes along with the four domains out of the CDC. In particular, domain number four, which is the strategies to improve community clinical linkages. Again, it's about what will work for the practice. How can we tie what the practice wants to do to what we want to do in terms of increasing reach into the community? So what we have with the four domains is the knowledge that it is important that the activities are available for those diagnosed with arthritis, diabetes, chronic disease, self-management programs, including physical activity, including self-management and educational programs, and that this also includes evidence-based lifestyle changes. So the CDC in the four domains is talking about wanting to make that connection and to document the connection, the referral, and what happens with the referral. So again, we're all on the same page that this works. And then, of course, the CMS triple goals, which are better care, better health, lower cost. So we're in total alignment here. Now, just a little quick review. One of the things that we talked about briefly was the idea of clinical and medical care and how it intersects with the work that we're talking about in terms of evidence-based programs. There are really two types of care plans. There's the care plan that the clinic uses, and then there's the care plan for the patient. So the care plan that the clinic uses includes the treatment goals, and that's the real medical intervention piece. It also includes the referral, whether to a specialist or to a community resource. And then it also includes responsibilities and medical home information, specialist information. The care plan that the patient works with includes all of those treatment plans, but also includes the self-management goal. And that's important because what it says to us all is that the care plan that the clinic is working with is now married to the plan that the patient wants to adopt for themselves in terms of what they want to do, what they want to be able to do, and how they're going to change their behavior to reach those goals. Now, this, as you might imagine, is a brand new skill for the practices and a brand new skill for those of us as individuals and as patients. So part of the work that we're going to talk about today is reinforcing those skills within the practice and so that the practice can reinforce them with the patient. The other piece of this is the referrals and how those referrals are tracked and then how accountable the organization and the practice is to following up on those referrals. So the strength of your programs, whether you're coming from the state, a community-based organization, a health system, the strength of this program relates directly to how closely you can marry all of these clinical medical needs to what's happening within your program. So I want to talk just a little bit about some successes we have had with implementation models. And these are specifically those that we've been involved with at COA, Consortium for Older Adult Wellness. We have some videos that I would strongly suggest, if you have a moment, you take a look at. They are at www.coaw.org, and we'll have the link for you at the end of the webinar. We also, these are actually, we call them virtual site visits, and you can get to them from the front page of our website. What we have done is we did some great little videos on how classes, specifically the chronic disease self-management program, how those are being used and embedded within health systems. And again, I want to go back to there's different types of implementation models. There is a model where a practice or a health system takes the program, trains their own folks to lead it or coach it, and then it's embedded within the program. Here in Colorado, we've worked with the Veterans Administration, and they have been running the program on their own within their own four walls, handling their own referral systems, doing their own promotion within the VA, and then we have helped them by training the leaders in their program and doing some technical support. Now, so you technically can refer to those as also a hybrid because we are, as a community-based organization, assisting them. But in another state, it would not need to be a COA that was making the training and the technical support possible. It could also be a state organization or another partner. So when we talk about community-based organizations, we're talking about organizations that are nonprofit organizations, organizations that are area agency on aging. We are talking about a number of different kinds of Volunteers of America meal sites. We're talking about rec centers. We're talking about a number of different organizations that have classes running and are open to connecting to health systems. And we've worked with a number of those now. And then the hybrid is really where you have all of the partners from the state, from the community-based organization, all working together. And that's really the hybrid. Now, we have some wonderful success stories with family medicine practices as well as with community health centers. And one of the ways that I can say that I feel like our messaging has worked with the practices is the same things that we are saying to you on this webinar series, when you watch the virtual site visits, they will say the same thing back. Gosh, this really works with what we need at the practice level, and we're able to document those referrals. And working with our partners, they've been able to really match what we need, and they've made it easy for us. And so one of the things that is important in referral systems is to make it easy for the part of the for the part of the clinic and the health system. Because if it isn't easy, if it's too much work, then they will look for a way to do it more easily because time is money in that system. So I am looking to see, it looks like that we have a question. And Mary, I'm just looking to see if this is from Laura. So Laura says, self-management goal setting is one of the biggest challenges that our clinic has had. Some providers take this as an opportunity to add their goals for the patient instead of taking the time to coach the patient, although for setting their own goals. It can be a big culture shift, especially for providers who were trained in the old paradigm. You bet. And thank you, Laura. And one of the things that we have found and that we're going to talk about next time in more detail, but I'll just give you a heads up, is that self-management support within the practice has been one of the things that we've become more and more involved with in terms of going in and training, working with medical assistants, working with providers on what's the difference between what I want to do as a patient and what you want me to do. And what I want to do is probably what's going to happen. You and my provider can give me all sorts of information, but until I do something differently, until I make a behavioral change of some sort that I want to do or that I am willing to do, then things don't change. And so we have developed some trainings, and I'm going to share some pieces of those trainings with you next time, because it is about defining what is self-management and then helping the practice understand that everybody has a role to play in that, from the front office back and from the back to the front. So that is very much a value-added piece that whether you are a state partner, whether you are a health system partner, or whether you're a community partner, that you can really sink your teeth into and help the practices by helping them understand that. And so I promise you next time we're going to get into some more specifics on that. So thank you for that, Laura. So the other piece I want to talk about is there are different types of referral systems. So we talked about how many various ways there are to either work with a program that's embedded, a program that's in the community, a program that is a hybrid of those two. There are also different types of referral systems. There are some referral systems that can be done within an embedded program. For example, if you're the Veterans Administration, if you have the program housed totally within your site, if you are referring within your own practice and within your own system, and you're then doing the program or the classes within that system, you're doing an internal process and you have an embedded system. On the other side, you can have an embedded system within your primary care practice or within your community health center that's very much embedded, except that you send your referrals to a partnering organization on the outside who helps you take that referral from an initial conversation in a referral form to having that person enrolled and in classes. And then the classes can take place at the practice, at the health system, or in the community. So as you can see, we have a number of choices that we want to talk about. And what we want to go over here just real briefly are the differences, whether it's an outside process or an internal process, what the workflow looks like, what the referral form can look like, what kind of reports you might want to do, and what kind of feedback you can do. Because a referral can be used in any of those various systems we've talked about, and a referral and a workflow is valuable whether it is for something that's going outside of a health system or something that's being used within the health system. You know, I promised you when we first started this that I would try and share some of the places where we had hit our head against the wall and had learned what to do and what not to do. And I think this very simple referral process is a really good example of what we have learned. This is a very simple version of a workflow plan. When we first started working with some of our partners, we had very detailed Gantt charts and decision matrix trees, and it was quite amazing. But what we found when working with the practice is that as they were working through their transformation toward becoming a patient-centered medical home, they were doing all sorts of very detailed work. They were documenting everything. And for us to come in with something easy and simple, with some color to it, was helpful to them. And what it meant was that not only the quality improvement team could understand what the flow was going to be, but the person at the front desk could. And perhaps the patient could, and the medical assistant could, and the person who was doing the billing in the back that helped hand out forms occasionally, everyone could understand this. So I want to walk through this with you. And it is, you'll see a couple of different variations on this. This is the one that we have done for the Chronic Disease Self-Management Program, and you will have a copy of this that you can adjust for your own project. And I will tell you that this little form has been very helpful and is being used in a number of states. So it starts at the top here with COA. That would be us. But clearly, we're talking about your program, so you insert yourself there, and the clinic meet to discuss self-management. Now, we just were talking, Laura had mentioned that there needs to be some training in there with the practice and what is self-management. What's self-management support? What's the difference between a patient goal and a treatment goal? All of those conversations take place right up here at the top. And one of the things that we have learned is if we have those conversations up front, it saves us all time, energy, and hitting ourselves against walls. So I should also tell you that when we do training on this referral process, we spend a couple of days just on the pieces and parts included within this diagram. So there's a lot of subtle things in here that we're going to cover today. Some of them we'll cover next time, but we'll talk about some of the pieces that are in here. So we meet with a practice. We discuss self-management, self-management support. In our case, what we're really wanting to do is to get the buy-in of the practice or the clinic and introduce to them what is a chronic disease self-management program or the diabetes program or a matter of balance or any of the other programs that are evidence-based. And how do we then train the clinician to make a referral into the program? If it's not the clinician that's going to be doing the work, if it's the medical assistant, if it's the front office person, we also spend time in training those folks as well. We then go to the actual referral of the patient and we request a signed referral form. One of the things that we learned is that we needed to be very specific about what is a referral and what a referral is not, and that we wanted to be regarded, we meaning the folks offering an evidence-based program or promoting the program on behalf of our partners, we wanted to make sure we were taken very seriously. So we did not just want to be someone who came in, made a presentation on a nice program, and then left. We wanted an agreement in writing with the practice that they were going to refer. We wanted a real referral form from the practice, and it can be either an electronic referral form or one that the patient signs. We base how we're going to work on that piece based on what the practice is using. If they're already using an EMR system and they have templates in place for referrals, we can do that. If they want to fax it, we can do that. If they insist that they need a patient's signature on every referral, that's great for us. If they feel like it's a continuation of service so that it is HIPAA appropriate from their point of view to just indicate that they have referred to us, they don't need a patient signature, that's fine. But again, these are all the nuances that we work with up front when we're working with a practice or a clinic. We then receive the referral form, and we reach out to the person who is referred, and we work on enrolling them into class. Now, any of you who have done evidence-based programs know that that step right there takes time. I would say right now about 60% of the folks that are referred into our programs overall, about 60% of them end up attending the next available class, which means that 40% of those who are referred that we are able to contact do not attend the next available class, which means that we then can keep communicating with them and hope to enroll them in a future class. That 60% has been a hard-won jump from about 25%. We found that it really varies practice by practice, provider by provider, on what kind of job is done to set up the referral. We have practices that over 90% of the folks that we receive a referral from those providers go into class immediately. Doctor says, I need this class, so I'm going to take this class. And that's lovely. That's wonderful. That makes our job easier and makes our statistics look great. But the truth of the matter is, the sooner we can call someone who's been referred and say, we understand you saw your healthcare provider and they want you to take this class, I'm calling to get you set up, that's where we have great success. The trick is to actually get them on the phone. And especially our friends at the community health centers have shared with us some of the practices that they have used that are HIPAA compliant so that we are able to get in touch with those folks and help them get a class scheduled. We then have them attend the class. And one of the things that we track are not only the number of referrals related to the number of enrollments, but then those folks that start classes, obviously completer rates. So we're able to give that information back to the practice. And then as part of what we have now as a standard operating procedure for our classes is to have the participants write a letter back to their provider indicating what they've learned, what they want to do differently, and they set an action plan, a goal for the next 3 to 6 months. We make sure the providers get that information. And we've had people who have listed all of their providers and all of their specialists because they want to make sure everybody knows what they're working on. And then we do some coaching with the practice on what to do with that information once you've received it. How do you incorporate that into your records? How do you incorporate that into the next conversations that you have with a patient? So this is the basic referral process flow that we use and that we talk with practices about. This is not carved in stone. It's not even a PDF. It's a Word document. You can make many changes to it. And we have, and I'll show you some other versions of this, but this is basically a referral process. Now, this includes us as a partner or community-based organization in this. That does not mean you have to do it that way. You can do it as an embedded and do the same referral process and workflow within your practice. I want to talk a little bit about what a centralized referral system is. A centralized referral system is different than just a basic workflow referral. A centralized referral system really happens when a group of providers, a large health system, a group of partners come together and want to do a collaborative effort to streamline referral process from multiple sources. So, for example, within Colorado, we have the statewide chronic disease self-management program collaborative, big, long name. But what that's about is having providers, encouraging providers from and case managers that are working with our regional care collaborative, our accountable care organizations, from numerous health systems that we are reaching out to across the state to encourage them to go to one place to refer so that they are not trying to figure out who they need to send what to for a referral. We have them all go to the same place. And then from our offices, we then contact them and help get them into classes in their community. So we are centralizing that system. Does that mean that a centralized referral system is good for everybody? Not at all. And I know that there have been states that have worked the system in addition to Colorado. I'll show you what our Colorado system looks like. It is it's a great effort in terms of the kind of staffing that needs to happen, and to have we have wonderful coordinators that contact folks by the end of the next business day. So if we get a referral on a Tuesday, by the close of business on Wednesday, we've been in touch with that person. The other thing that needs to be considered are the HIPAA considerations. You can't just email protected health information back and forth. So it requires things like secure websites. It requires faxing as opposed to emailing. It requires setting up faxes so that they are going to one person where they're not in public view. There are all sorts of different secure website information that needs to be considered as well. And the other big question, I think, is return on investment. What is the cost of a centralized referral system as opposed to the cost of each organization handling their own referral? And I think that, honestly, we believe that the centralized referral system from COA's perspective has been very successful, and we have used that with some of our folks for since about 2009. In terms of the statewide effort and working with multiple license holders and multiple players, both in terms of health systems and in terms of providers as well as license holders, there's still a question is in terms of the return on investment. Is it helpful to the health system? Absolutely, especially if they don't already have a relationship with a partner who's providing classes, and especially if they're not planning on embedding the program. However, there's a big question mark there. And I'm going to go and read another question here. The question is, I see, okay. How receptive are leaders to mailing the patient letters to providers? Who pays for that? And how do you go about it adding those additional duties to the leader's scope of work? That is a very good question. here's how we do this. The other question that came from Jackie is, if it's not a covered benefit, is it appropriate to call it a referral? I thought the term referral signaled reimbursement from healthcare. Yes, usually it does, and we have just started using it, and we have, because we are handling it like a referral, because we are providing information back that they are tracking and charting, the term referral is comfortable for the health systems that we work with. And I will say that that is, we've had that experience both with primary care practices, and we've had that experience with community health centers, that they are very comfortable calling it a referral because we are treating it as a referral, and we are tracking it as a referral. So, yes, you are right. Traditionally, that's been so, and since we are providing a service for them, the term referral seems to fit. In terms of how receptive are leaders to this additional duty, we have sort of included and hardwired it into the training that we do with leaders. We are hoping to do the same thing with the diabetes prevention program that we're working with now. We're moving toward doing the same thing with a number of our different falls prevention classes. We use volunteers and staff to teach classes, and when we use a volunteer, they receive a stipend. And so as part of that, we are able to outline, this is the paperwork we do, this is what happens with this. Some of our partnering organizations, and we're kind of in a unique place in Colorado. There are 16 different license holders in the state for the chronic disease program. We're probably the largest in the state right now, and we work with a number of different organizations, everything from Area Agency on Aging to community-based organizations like Volunteers of America to the Veterans Administration to community health centers to practices that have embedded the program all under our license. But one of the things that when we work with a system, when we work with a leader, we talk about these same things as just standard operating practice. So has it taken us a while to get there? Absolutely. Absolutely. And how do we do these referral letters? For some of the groups that we work with, they handle sending those, I'm sorry, not referral letters, the feedback letters to the practice. Some of the folks that we work with are very happy to just take care of mailing those on their own. Others don't have the bandwidth to do that, and so they send them back to us with their paperwork, and we take care of them from that perspective. And it occurs to me that that is another form I'm going to send out to Mary Brick so she can get that for you so you can see what that looks like. I want to just show you real quickly. Somebody asked for the exact name of our collaborative again. It is the Statewide Chronic Disease Self-Management Program Collaborative. And let me tell you the easy way to find us. If you look at selfmanagementcolorado.org, all one word, selfmanagementcolorado.org, you will find the beginnings of our centralized referral system and the beginnings of our Self Management Colorado website, which includes classes for all of the collaborative participants across our state, as well as referral systems and frequently asked questions. I also just want to show you a couple of other ways that we have used these referral and feedback loops. This is basically the same one, just filled out a little differently as that first workflow we showed you. This is one that we are using with our regional care coordinating organizations. In Colorado, we call them RECOs. They are the folks that are tasked with coordinating care for patients reached through Medicaid expansion. And depending on which state you're in, they may also be called coordinated care organizations, or CCOs. They may be called regional care organizations, or RCOs. They may be administrative service organizations, or ASOs, or any other acronym you might want to come up with. What happens is, in our state, a Medicaid person is working with a RICO, once they choose a primary care provider from those that are in partnership through the RICO, then we see referrals that come to us from that community health center or from that provider. But before they get to a primary care provider, they're going to be working with care managers, case managers. If they are high users of the system, if they are folks that spend a lot of time in hospital emergency rooms, they are going to be assigned to a care manager that can help them then be referred into appropriate self-management classes, into appropriate exercise programs, into appropriate activities, so as well as behavioral health interventions and all sorts of other things. So when we work with the regional care collaboratives, same kind of system, if you'll see at the top, we work with them, we work with their staff to discuss what is it that we offer in the way of evidence-based programming. We then make sure that they are referred, and then we handle those referrals, again, in a HIPAA-compliant way, and we feed back the information to the practice, to the referring case manager, and then we follow up. And when I say we, within COA, we work with our staff and our coordinators, and we are able to do that because of contracts that we have to provide those services and because of grant funding that we have to be able to provide that kind of service and follow up on referrals. And we are finding more and more folks are willing to have us help with those pieces, whether by contractually or to write us into grants to be able to do that work, because they're finding that it's a way to reach people that they haven't been able to reach before. Then they go through the class, then we give them feedback, and they too write a letter back to the practice that is outlines what it is that they have learned about managing their own chronic conditions, or their how they're going to manage the pain from their arthritis, or whatever is appropriate for the class that they're in, and then that is used within the clinic to document self-management goals. So, this is kind of a trick question. What are the roles for you all within the various referral systems? So, specifically, what can be addressed only through a state health department? What can be handled only by a community-based organization, and what can only be done by the practice or the health system? And since we are short on time, I'm not going to take a poll, but I am going to tell you that there are no absolutes here. So there are many things that can be addressed through the state health department in terms of making the connections, in terms of providing expertise, in terms of providing bandwidth and helping with finding funding, but that does not need to be necessarily all handled there. It can be handled through partnerships. What part can only be handled by a community-based organization? Well, you know, if you ask me, I work for COA, so I would tell you COA can do everything, but if you are in another state or if you are working with a state health department that has the technical expertise and the ability to connect and make those bridges, then by that is what you need. So you don't need the community-based organization, you need the health system, and you need the player at the state who can help make those bridges. And what can only be done by the practice or the health system? Well, the only piece I can think of that you really need their help with is to have access to their patients, and especially their patients that have chronic conditions, that have specific conditions that you have programming that addresses it. For example, they have a diagnosis of arthritis, and you have arthritis programming. So for that reason, you really do need to connect with the practice or the health system in a very specific way. But in terms of where are the rules and what is the one way to do it versus, you know, this is the right way, all other ways are wrong, there is no such thing. It's a matter of seeing what you have on your plate that will work with what they need. So that's, we're going to come back to that, and that's going to be a part of your homework. But I wanted to give you some ideas on just some different interventions and some different things that we have seen and that have worked. This one is an intervention design that we did with an organization that is provides coaching for practices that are working toward transformation to becoming patient-centered medical homes, health teamworks. And one of the keys, I think, to doing the work we've been able to do is the relationships that we've had with organizations like Health Teamworks and like the Colorado Community Health Network, who works with the federally qualified health clinics and safety net clinics in the state. So when they go into work with a practice, they're able to outline for the practices that they work with at Health Teamworks, this is what we will do. We'll provide on-site coaching. We'll provide the opportunity to standardize referrals. We'll provide follow-up. And then what COA can do is we can provide the network of organizations. We can provide the lay leaders. We can coordinate with referrals. We can get classes on-site, and we can do data. So that is one way that we have had two community-based organizations working together in order to embed classes within a practice. And this is just another little insight into how that works with Health Teamworks in terms of identifying practice champions and follow-up. I want to show you now some documents, and we're going to go for about another 10 minutes, and I promise we're going to have lots of time for questions. I know we have a couple of hands up. So this is just a real simple version of a clinical workflow. What we discovered is rather than going in and sitting with a practice and saying, well, let's come up with a joint workflow for how you're going to refer people into evidence-based programs, it worked a lot better to go in with a nice graph with pretty blue boxes and some general ideas, and then we could adjust it based on what the staff needed. But it was much easier to jointly edit what was going to happen than it was to go in and create as a group. So this is where we started. This is a real simple clinical workflow. This is one that we did for an organization that was involving their front desk. They had a form they passed out when a patient signed in that said, part of what we're going to do today is talk with you about what your self-management goals are. And then the medical assistant engaged them in positive conversations, got an idea of where they were at in terms of the possibility of action planning, of goal setting, and of introducing the idea of programming. And then we had things that worked with the provider, we did the documentation, and then at the end, when the patient was checking out, who handled handing them a copy of their goal and referrals, who handed them the logs, the brochures, the backup information. So we went through this with the practice. They were able to document what they needed, and we were able to get what we needed in writing as well. So it's about using these kind of forms as the conversation starters. Now, this is another piece that we adjusted from some of our work back in 2008, 2009 with Health Teamworks, and with work they were doing with the Colorado Medical Society. It's called a care compact. And we call it that when we work with the practices. A care compact usually is something that a primary care provider writes with a specialist, or a primary care provider writes with a hospital system that says, this is how we will transfer a patient to you, this is how you will transfer a patient to us, this is how we'll exchange information. And since we wanted to be seen as a provider of a service and a professional on an equal footing with them, what we did is started using a care compact. So we do have a copy of this. Again, this does not mean that you will have to use exactly ours, but this is where we have gotten to with ours. You may find that you want different things than yours. What we realized was we really needed to spell out expectations. So you will see this is what it looks like on the inside. We have a section that says patient referrals, and it includes things like the primary care physician will refer patients to us. They will tell the patient they're referring them. and that they will give us one point of contact within the practice. That's what the primary care person is agreeing to. What Ko is saying is we're going to handle that with in a HIPAA-compliant way. We're going to provide a single resource person, a single referral contact for you. We're going to follow up and report back to you what happens. And if you are uncertain as to whether a patient is appropriate or not, we are more than happy to talk with you about that. Now, we have other things, other pages within this document that say when we're going to handle, how quickly we're going to handle things, how many times we're going to contact a person, that kind of thing. That's all in the care compact. And again, we found it really helpful to manage expectations. Now, if a practice decides they don't want to sign this, if they want to do just a simple memorandum of understanding, we're fine with that. But we prefer to have this so we can really spell it out. And again, you'll have access to a copy of this. This is our webpage, and this is COA's, and I would say this is where I would suggest going so you can see our virtual tours. There's Lexi there, one of the medical assistants, who's now a trained leader for us, but who is a real, she was a real practice champion and has been very involved with embedding classes at their practice. So just wanted to show you that so you'll know what you're looking for. We already talked about the common referral things. This is the referral form that we use. And you will have a copy of this too. It refers to Healthier Living Colorado because that's how we've branded the Chronic Disease Self-Management Program. But again, you can use this as you see fit. You'll see at the bottom there's provider information. There's also a place where the patient can sign. Again, just to restate that this form is faxed to us or sent through a secure email address. And when we follow up with these, we make sure that we send the information back to the practice in a HIPAA-compliant format as well. One of the things we learned early on was that we needed to be very clear about this is how you refer someone to us. One of the first clinics we worked with literally ran off a copy of all of their patients and sent it to us so that we could call out to all of their patients, basically cold calling their patients saying, hi, do you have a chronic condition? You want to go to a class? And that did not work well. It didn't work well for us. It didn't work well for the practice. So we really learned to, we are happy to work with anyone that they would like to see in an evidence-based program. Period. So we don't necessarily have to have them at a certain place within their activation, but we do need to know that it's a specific referral that's been mentioned to the patient so that nobody is surprised when we call. This is the information that we provide back to the referring practice or the referring source. I'm sorry, it's a little fuzzy to read. This is, of course, made up data. But it basically says who it is that's been referred and whether they were enrolled or not. And then you'll see on the right-hand side is all the different contacts we have had. Did we get an answer? Did we leave a message? Did we talk with them? Are they interested in attending class now? We will keep following up with folks until they tell us, no, go away. I don't want to talk to you. Or if over a period of time we have gone and left 6 or 8 messages or had 6 or 8 no answers, then we'll get back with the practice and say we have not been able to reach these folks. But we're very clear about when we leave a voicemail message, what kind of message we leave, and we then indicate which program they were enrolled in. So these usually go back to the practice once a week or to the case managers once a week, or every other week as determined by the care compact and the agreements that we come up with for them. This is a sample of that provider feedback form that I mentioned. This is one of my very favorite forms in the whole world, and that's saying a lot considering how many different pieces of paper we all work with. We came up with this over time because we really wanted the folks that were referring people into the classes to understand the light bulb moments that happen in evidence-based programs. whether you're talking about a movement program for folks with an arthritis diagnosis, whether you're talking about a diabetes prevention class, a falls class, there are moments when suddenly you get it. Oh, if I do this differently, I will feel differently. So we asked people what they had learned, what they did not know about their chronic condition and what affected it. We see wonderful things come there. Who knew being in a bad mood could affect my pain level? Who knew that if I actually exercised, it would help the pain level? Who knew if I took my medication on time that my numbers would be better when I checked my blood? Who knew? This is the part where providers, healthcare providers, shake their heads like, well, of course. But it's a course from the medical perspective, but from those of us that are real people and are in these classes and enrolling people into these classes, this is all new information that we can share back. Then we talk about what is my action plan? What do I want to do for the next 3 to 6 months? And then one of the healthcare providers we worked with said, would you please rewrite this and make it so that it is exactly what we need to document in the REMR, meaning how often am I going to do it, when am I going to do it, and what's my confidence level for doing it, which are all things that they need to have in their self-management goals section within their patient records. So we were happy to do that. It was a great idea. And then we do send those on. We are happy to incur the postage cost to do that. We'll even take the time to make sure that we have the address right, just because we've had great response. And we've had physicians who have called us back and said, I didn't refer them to this class, but I'm fascinated by what this is about, and can I send other people? So it's become a marketing tool in that way, too. And I just want to real quickly run you through some of the simple reporting that you can do back to a practice. Now, if you are the state, you may have access to a number of other different kinds of reports that you can include information on. What I wanted to do is show you just from our perspective, simple reports that we're able to provide and that you can provide back to a practice that helps them meet their needs. So it does not have to be a big expense that you're incurring to be able to give this kind of information back. It can be something as simple as who referred and who referred more patients. It can be something, this one is just an overview for one of the practices we worked with, 34 total referrals, 11 went into an April class, 7 went into a May class, 6 said they were going to go into a March class. So 71% returned on the referrals turned into enrollments. One of the other things that became very obvious from this graph is Dr. Culp is clearly in charge of, he was the real leader, the champion in terms of making referrals. Dr. Allen, who is down here, got given a great amount of grief for not referring more than one patient, and an outside provider actually referred more patients to the class that was held at Dr. Culp's practice than one of his own physicians on staff. So it created a sort of competition in-house within the practice, and they are still going strong on doing classes. And so it is not a difficult report to pull together, but it is something that lets the practice know that you're aware of what they need and what they are tracking. This is just a simple template that is being used by Valleywide, which is a community health center here in Colorado. This is their community services referral form, and it is set up so that they can easily track and they can get those preset as to where those are going. They can send them to us, who's made the referral. So when we really feel comfortable with the practice is when they start adjusting their EMRs and their health information technology plans to include the referral forms. This is an action plan that's being used at Plains, which is also a community health center, which refers to the patient's treatment goal, the referral tracking, and then the self-management goal as well, all in the same form. And part of what we want to talk about in getting ready for your homework is what are the stages of readiness to move forward with a referral system. Are you looking at, as a state, helping to connect referral processes with to outside partners? Are you wanting to look at referral systems and helping to support what your health system is doing internally? If you are a community-based organization, if you are one of the partners that's on the calls, do you have the bandwidth to help follow up with referrals? If you're at the health system, do you want help taking the referrals and turning them into enrollments, or do you want to handle all of that in-house on your own? And from the practice level, what do you need to make that work for you? So all of these are things that are, you know, we talk about how the readiness level and the activation level of the patient. What I'm suggesting is that there's also activation levels and readiness levels within all of the partnering organizations within the state as well. And so where are you and what do you want to be working on next? For example, if within a health system, is there a commitment both at the executive level and the administrative level to buy into the idea of establishing some sort of a referral system, whether it's just in-house or whether it's going outside? So having just having an awareness of what those moving parts are about is helpful. Workflow and work style. I'm laughing because here's what we've learned. When you're doing a presentation and someone says, how much time do you need to get a class in place here at our health system? The real answer might be that it might take, in reality, a couple of months. By the time you promote it, get the referrals going, by the time you get the buy-in from everybody you need to, by the time you get the leaders or the lifestyle coaches in place, it may take you a couple of months. But the correct answer is we can do it now. And the reason for that is that on their side, the person asking the questions, they have their own timeline that they're working with. For them to say that they are going to start immediately referring people means immediate may be defined as any time between my next patient and 5 months from now when we get it into the workflow and where I'm able to track it internally. So what we have discovered is that we want to, in our messaging, say we will be ready when you are ready. That is our goal as a community-based partner or working with our state partners. Our goal is to be ready when you're ready. And then we match that. Because if I say, oh, well, it's going to take me months to do this, then their response will be, well, then we'll put it on hold until you're ready. And so we have learned not to do it that way. We've learned to say we are ready when you're ready. How much does a class cost? Now, that's a question we get a lot. And the answer to that is, how do you want to define that? What we have found is usually when they say, how much does a class cost, the answer is another question, which is they're really asking who's going to pay for it. Is it going to be something that is embedded into the health system so that the health system is absorbing the cost and the patient who's attending the program is going to be doing a copay? Is it something that an insurance payer is going to be covering? If so, are they going to cover the whole cost? Is it something that you're talking about the cost of the class to be delivered on-site specifically to your patients at a time of your choosing? Or is it something like a national standard, oh, it's going to cost you nationally, the chronic disease self-management program costs $320 to $350 per person? I mean, there are a number of different answers to those questions, and they all revert back to work style, workflow, and messaging. The one that makes me laugh out loud is the how many referrals can you handle? When we used to make presentations with our partners to health organizations, they would say, I could refer hundreds of people. How many referrals can you handle? And we got very excited and thought they were actually going to be referring hundreds of people and that we would suddenly be inundated and that rather than offering 5 classes at a time. We maybe needed to offer 20 classes at a time. And what we found out is that when we're talking with people, every presentation we've ever had has said, someone has said, we could refer every one of our patients to evidence-based programs. And the answer is yes, you could, but they actually have to do the referral. So when you hear, in terms of workflow and work style, when you hear someone say, we could refer hundreds, we could refer everyone, are you ready for the tsunami of referrals that you are going to get from us? Just nod your head and say, yes, we are. Because the reality of it is, the referrals that they think of as being a huge number of referrals are actually not as overwhelming, and because it takes time for them to do that as well, and for them to get the referrals out to you. So even if they refer to you every patient they're seeing that day, and they receive 7 referrals, see seven patients, that's 7 referrals. And unfortunately, that's not the tsunami of referrals that you may have in your head. So we hear this every time we make a presentation. Well, how many people can you handle? And we have yet to hit that point where we say, oh, yeah, we're done. We can't handle anymore. So just know that everybody has different ways of working with this. Now, the reason I'm saying all of these pieces in part is I want to talk to you about your homework. And your homework is to take a look at what you're currently doing or not doing with a live referral system. And what I mean by a live referral system is not just a recommendation, not just a brochure in a lobby, but a live referral system where they fill out a form or they use an EMR and the patient knows they're being referred. And do you have partnerships in place to help you develop or expand the referral system? If you're looking at a referral system, are you thinking as a state partner, do you want to be working just with referral systems that are within and embedded within an organization, or do you see a role in bridging the connection between a community-based health organization, the state, and a health system? And if so, what is your role in all that? Are there referral systems in place? Do you want to beef them up? And then what additional support do you need to expand that system or develop that system? And then your real action plan is what can you do between now and January 7th? So what we want you to do is just come up with, here's the beginning pieces of what we want to do. And again, keep in mind there is no one correct answer for this. And although I will give brownie points for the people that get theirs in first and come up with great ideas and answers and wonderful ways of identifying the work they're doing, this is more about you and what you want to do. And keep in mind that within the embedded system, within a community-based system, within a hybrid system, and within an internal referral system and an external referral system, you have many choices to make. And our action plan, as always, is like a self-management goal. What do you want to do? Is it achievable? How are you going to do it? And how confident are you that you can do this on a scale of 1 to 10? So I know we have a ton, or maybe not a ton, we have a couple of questions. And so I'm going to leave up here. This is the contact information, and the website is there. And let's see. Mary, do you want to help me with the questions?
Sure, Lindsay. I'm going back a ways, but there is a question about the licensees, and this is in reference to the statewide collaborative that you have in Colorado.
Yes.
And the question is about the licensees, and it says, since there are other licensees throughout the state, how do they all fit into this statewide initiative and collaborate together?
Well, as the current chair of the collaborative, I would say that some days it's like herding cats. That's my favorite. It's my favorite way to explain it. We have we actually have 16 license holders that are active in the state. All 16 of them have agreed to participate within the collaborative, and we came up with some joint things that we wanted to do together, like to jointly show the number of classes we have available, to jointly talk about sharing fidelity, to jointly discuss funding opportunities. at about the same time we started working on that collaborative piece, not only with the license holders, but with our state partners at Department of Health and Human Services, Healthcare Policy and Finance, and our Department of Public Health and the Environment, all of those folks came together. There was also a funding opportunity that came through through the AOA funding for the Chronic Disease Self-Management Program, which gave us a way to help focus. Although not all of the license holders were involved in that funding, it helped demonstrate what was possible if we were all working together and sharing information. So one of the things that you'll see if you take a look at Self-Management Colorado is you will see that there are a number of classes that are all called different things. So, for example, we call it Healthier Living Colorado. It's also called Be Well, Chronic Disease Self-Management Program, Healthy Living, Healthier Living, depending on who the license holder is. But it's still the same class, and it is identified that way and gives you contact information. So we have a non-financial agreement that we asked each of the license holders to sign. And I think as we're coming to the end of our first year, I would say we have made great strides, and I would say we still have a long ways to go, in particular around jointly promoting what we're doing and also really collaborating on trainings and things. But that's how we do it. That's the long answer.
Okay. And then let's go on to our next question. These are just in the order that they were presented. Regarding the feedback form, how do you ensure that the participants follow up with their healthcare provider, or how do you ensure in general that they follow up with their healthcare provider after a workshop is over?
What we do is we send that back and put that back on the provider's plate. Most of the folks that are being referred by the provider are folks that have either a diagnosis that is specific to what they're tracking for their health, for their NCQA recognition. So, for example, they will be working with a panel of patients that have diabetes. They'll be working with their patients that are diagnosed with arthritis or with hypertension. And so part of what they're doing is tracking fairly closely those patients. And so if they're referring them to classes with us and then we're feeding back the information from the classes, part of what they're doing is really tracking with those specific patients that they've referred. So that's part of what they need to do and be able to document. So it works well for both of us. We've also had really great anecdotal information and feedback that it's given them a reason to call out to a patient. So if, for example, we have trouble tracking a patient or we have trouble contacting them, and then when we do, they say, I don't know why you're talking to me. I don't have anything wrong. I don't know why they referred me to this class. That provides the practice with an opportunity to call out to the patient and say, let's have a conversation about the fact that arthritis and asthma and hypertension, et cetera, that's a chronic condition, and we are a team and we want to work together. And so this is the part that will help you do your work, and we will help you with our part on the medical intervention. So we've had really good feedback from the practices that they like hearing back who gets it and who's going to class, and they also like hearing who isn't going to class or refusing it. And we don't get a lot of those, but when we do, it's been good information for the practice.
Okay, thank you. And then the last question in the chat is regarding the Health Team Works. Somebody wanted to know what are they, what do they do? Are they a consulting firm, a state accreditation, or what?
They are a consulting firm that works with practice transformation. They're a nonprofit organization. They were originally involved with writing clinical guidelines in Colorado, and now they work in multiple states. There are other organizations like Health Team Works, and next time we'll have a longer list for you. But another one that is a big one is an organization called TransferMed. There's Dorland Health. There is the National Association of Community Health Centers, and then most of the states have their own organizations for community health centers. All of those are involved in one way or another with practice transformation, and they do it differently. Some of them are nonprofits, some of them are for-profit organizations, but they're all involved in working with practices and helping them walk through recognition, whether it's with NCQA or Joint Commissions or with other folks. So that would be a great place to connect. And also,
okay.
I promise we'll have more information and a list next time.
And that brings us to the end of the questions in the chat. And I think if...
Question, how do you answer the class cost question and how do you negotiate with the providers on price? I want to jokingly say very carefully, but the answer is very much specific to which project are we working with the practice on. Is it one that we are funding through a contract, through a one particular grant or another piece of work? So we really vary it. I have some information I'll be happy to share in terms of how we, a little grid we use to determine how we charge for different pieces and parts, and I'll be happy to share that with you next time. And then Sabrina also asked if we could put together the answer that I gave about the collaborative agreement, if we can put that together in writing, and I will be happy to get you that too so you can see what that agreement looks like.